Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Let's bring in Nate Bauer, the great Nate Bauer, on 3.com, Bluette Illustrated. Sir, always a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me. What's going on?
Not too much. They point me toward whatever I talk.
Sure.
So, yeah, this is the role I have. Let's start with Chop Robinson. No surprise.
Sure.
So Chop is going to opt out of the Peach Bowl. He's going to go to the draft, and I think this was expected, about a year ago.
Yeah. How about that? The guy who is exceptional and has really earned his reputation is making the leap and you know, very much belongs in that conversation. I mean, he's just been so electric, so flashy, right? For if that's a word that counts. I mean, he's just always around the ball and has been so disruptive for Penn State's defense. I had a little bit of question as to whether or not Penn State could pull off convincing him to stick around on a limited rep schedule, right? I mean, it's certainly something that James Franklin has alluded to before. They really try to massage the situation as well as they can with these guys to just get them to continue to be a part of the team, right? To still be around, enjoy the ball trip, what have you. But it's really a narrative and a storyline that works counter to what has become, you know, kind of accepted thinking, right, in terms of what agents are saying, what the NFL has kind of presented of, okay, you did your work, all your work is done, begin the process, right, begin the process of maximizing every day and getting yourself ready for the combine and then the NFL draft after that.
Yeah, I mean, no question. And James, really starting with Saquon Barkley, that was about the first time you really saw how they worked out the ability to you know, the only guy that opted out of last year's game was Joey Porter Jr.
Yep.
Everybody else played, and they were able to massage minutes for players along the way. But everybody has their own way of doing it and going about it. And so this is what they decided to do. Interesting, because Caleb Williams is opting out of USC's game in the Holiday Bowl, but it looks like Bo Nix is going to play in the Fiesta Bowl. So everybody has to make their own decision.
Yep. Yeah, it's you know, I'm just not sure that there's a defined right way to do it. I think the thing, again, the thing that Franklin tries to do is get people to, and when I say people, I mean the player and their family. Look, first of all of these guys have insurance policies, right? That they are insured against catastrophe for the season. That is not at issue. You never want to put your guys in a bad position, though, or in a place where they can get hurt or something that would happen to them that would throw off their NFL career. But that's why they handle it the way that they do, right? Having Chop available, or anybody else, you know, I'm assuming that this won't be the last one for Penn State. It's just kind of a give and take of how guys feel, how their parents feel, the people around them, and agents, and so on and so forth, as to whether or not it feels like a worthwhile investment on their part to remain part of the program, part of the team, until the bowl game ends. So we'll see, right? I mean, Kalen's got a decision to make. Olu is, of anybody, right, he's got the biggest decision to make. Mm-hmm. But we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Does On3.com carry heavy insurance on you and Fitz and Snyder and the and Pickle?
You know, you would hope. You would hope. We're there's no insurance for us opting out. I can tell you that. But catastrophic injury, I think we're covered. Thank God.
Just a thought. Thought to throw it out there. What do you think about the matchup with Ole Miss and the Peach Bowl?
Yeah, I think it's great for Penn State, and honestly, it's great for Ole Miss. I think it's you know, two programs that I can't remember if we talked after the Michigan game. I feel like we did. Where I kind of ran some numbers at that point in the season, and it was incredible how much of a mirror image the two programs were, not from a playing style, any of that stuff, just in terms of perceptions, how perceptions are shaped about top teams, right? Top 10, top 15. Ole Miss was the most direct comp in terms of quality of competition that Ole Miss had to play versus Penn State, what Penn State had played. If you go through the list, right, all of these other teams, the Big Ten East and the schedule that Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State play is not like anybody else. Bottom line, it is not like anybody else in college football. They are three of the top eight winning percentages in college football over the past 8 years, I want to say.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If you look, the SEC West has a great reputation, obviously. The difference between Alabama, LSU, and Texas A&M. Texas A&M is way below the top
eight.
No
question.
Right? Like,
no
question. It's not remotely close.
Yep.
LSU's in that conversation. Obviously, Alabama is, but it is a huge departure. And so, wrapping this up, Ole Miss is the only team in the SEC in that conversation. Missouri didn't have to play both Georgia and Alabama.
That's right.
They are the only ones that did. And so there's kind of a direct corollary there in terms of who they have faced, who Penn State has faced, and the quality of wins that they have.
Which then brings us to the college football playoff, the way it played out. Now, the roots of this do go back to the fraud alliance that Kevin Warren and Jim Phillips and George Kliavkoff, because they kept delaying the 12-team playoff. It should be this year. Ole Miss should be getting ready for a rematch against Georgia, and Penn State should be getting ready for a rematch at Ohio State. All right? Instead, we still have four for the final time because these three, messed it up. Simple as that.
Yep.
All right. I mean, they did. Yep. I mean, that's the roots of it, just so everybody knows. I mean, it has to be talked about more. What are the roots of something? Well, that's the roots of this going back. But in the end, Florida State is undefeated and out. Alabama is in. Your thoughts?
It's interesting because I think that sometimes I come across as not liking college football because I have strong opinions about the ways that it needs to change. I feel the way that I do because I like college football. I think it deserves much better. I think fans deserve better. I think the media deserves better. And absolutely, I think the teams that are playing the games deserve better than to have 13 people sitting in a closed-door conference room deciding that. I think those people deserve better than this. Right?
Yeah.
In this system.
Right.
It is patently dumb to have these be the parameters. It is something that is wildly different from any other sport. And people want to make the claim that that's what makes that's what makes college football such a great and unique sport. It's not. It does not help. It does not behoove college football to have a playoff where the representation of its participants is 3%. There's nothing remotely like it in pro sports. And guess what? These are pro sports, and that includes college sports. The NCAA tournament is close to 20%. NCAA baseball, you name it, across the board, playoffs for all of these sports has representation 15% plus. It is a wild departure, and it is patently unfair that these teams aren't getting into it, and it hurts the sport, not just right now, it hurts the sport's future. The lack of parity, the problems that you see in the game in terms of it being so one-sided, you have these great dynasties, it precludes the ability of programs to sell, hey, you might have a shot at making the playoffs. These things are going to be corrected next year to a certain extent. There is they can take more steps than they have. Expanding to 16, I think, is absolutely warranted.
Yes,
but this is a step in the right direction, and it is a shame, I think, and an embarrassment to college football that it took this situation this year for everyone to kind of finally get on the same page and say, "Man, this is really dumb. This is a really dumb way to operate the ability to crown a champion in one of the best sports there is."
And I agree. There isn't anything there. You said that I didn't. And I know how much you love the sport because you make commentaries because you care. I mean, you care about it. And that's why you make the commentaries you do, trying to make it better. Which then brings us to the Charlie Baker proposal that he'd like to throw out there. Essentially what he's trying to do here, and tell me if I'm correcting the dots correctly, I looked at it as we want you to have autonomy in the world of NIL and so forth, but not break away from the NCAA. That's how I viewed what he proposed.
Yep. No, I think that's right. I mean, look, I can see a lot of different ways that this goes. I think that certainly the sport has, James Franklin says this all the time, you know, has made more changes. The sport has changed more dramatically over the past 5 years than the prior 30. And so some of the dogma that exists in the sport is starting to fade a little bit, which I think is good in a large way. What is curious to me, what I will be interested to see, is whether or not the conference allegiances, right? We've been talking about expansion for so long that I'm wondering if the next step isn't actually shedding teams, right? Yeah. Shedding programs, finding a common space or allegiances that cross boundaries, that cross conferences, where you put together the big boys, for lack of a better
right? Exactly. Like,
put together the programs that spend what they spend on this, right? Because I see it as not fair in a lot of ways to programs that do things the right way but will never have the resources of Penn State, right, of Michigan, Ohio State, Alabama, right? And so at what point do you get to a place where it makes sense to have 32 teams, 40 teams, right, who are all kind of who want to participate in that type of a system and then have a next step down and give them ability to have a championship, to crown a champion of that level of play? Because right now, I just think what you see is you've got a mess in a lot of different directions. NIL is a big part of it. We are going to move at some point into collective bargaining. There will be the ability at some point of the universities themselves or the conferences, what have you. I don't know what that structure is going to look like, but players are going to get paid, right? It is long overdue. It's just a matter of sorting out how all of this is going to look. But I don't think by any stretch of the imagination that we're done. We're not done. This is going to continue to change. In a lot of ways, I think it's going to change for the better.
Well, the NCAA would like to have Congress bail them out.
Not going
to
happen.
This, right? And, you know, and to the credit of those in Congress, there have been several that have said, hey, you need to work this out yourself. Because and here's the bottom line. If I'm going before the Commerce Committee about the Commerce Department budget, the people sitting up there asking the questions, because it's their committee, are extremely well-versed in the issues of the Commerce Department. But if it comes to a sports thing, they are not well-versed as to how sports actually works. That's why I don't want them doing it, because it's not their area of expertise. And that's why I prefer they not be involved in it.
Yeah, I mean, I see a few things here. One, I think that the way that things are currently structured, Title IX is a massive hurdle to getting this to operate independently, right? College football and men's college basketball be separate and apart. That's the loophole of what these collectives are in a lot of ways. Is being able to kind of skirt that. They're clinging to amateurism. There's a lot of stuff I understand, even from my perspective of things that I would like to see change, that it's not as easy as snapping your fingers and saying, hey, just make it this way. These are public institutions. They are taxpayer funded in a lot of ways. I'm not saying completely, but they're not separate and apart, right? There are tax dollars that goes into this. And so there are laws on the books that demand operating in a certain way. So they got to figure that out. They got to figure that out. There has to be they have to put these smart people in a room and figure out how you do that without violating the law, right? And so I don't know what that looks like. I don't know what that looks like, but you know, certainly they are challenges that you know, for the sport to reach its potential, if it's going to stay on this course, which I believe it is, it's going to continue on this trajectory. It's only going to get you know, it's only going to be furthered. You know, they're going to have to figure those things out.
Right. And look, I remember when it was the O'Bannon case, and Mark Emmer testified. And I don't even think the O'Bannon people asked a question, because in direct examination, he's talking about the ivory tower and the whole thing. And, of course, everybody's just nodding their heads. Meanwhile, the O'Bannon people are like, keep going. You're winning the case for us. Great.
Thank you.
Right. All he had to do was get up and at least open the door and tell everybody where the money goes. Because every sport except for two loses money. How do you make up for it? Hey, in order to, you just look at the jury or the judge and say, how many of you were in favor of women's sports? Everybody put their hand up. Well, how do you pay for it? Now you got to pay for it. This is how we pay for it. And that's what he had to say.
And I mean, I think just maybe yesterday, the day before, Oregon has a lawsuit now that they're handling with some of the women student athletes who are claiming, probably rightfully, that things that are being, like, you just cannot you're in violation of the law if you are not expending the same resources toward women as you do for men. But you gotta, like, it's so tricky, because it feels like there's landmines everywhere in the conversation, but there shouldn't be. There is a world where college athletics can continue to exist, resources can continue to exist without making the whole thing crumble, because there is a bottom line reality to this that, like you said, there are 29 other sports. Forget women's, men's. Tennis doesn't exist without football.
Right.
For either gender. It does not matter.
Right,
and it is across the board. All of these sports are funded by what happens in basketball and football. And so, at some point, rationale has to take over and say, "Hey, this is how these other things are funded, but exceptions need to be made. Right, something needs to happen to allow a." What we all know exists to be true anyway, to finally recognize it as such.
Fabulous conversation. I really appreciate it. We kind of went a little far afield in a couple of areas, but I think it was important. No, but I thought it was important to talk about, because these are the big issues that will shape sports in the future.
No doubt. Penn State basketball.
Yep. Yeah, well, we'll talk about that again at some point.
not great, Steve. That's my commentary.
Well, see if they can get back on track. How about that?
It's an uphill climb, but we'll see.
Well, I'll be there to chronicle it. So whatever the climb is.
As always.
Thank you, my friend. Appreciate you.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Nate Bauer. On3.com, Blue Way Illustrated.